that long since I last spoke here, but it's still good to be here. So, and I do appreciate that you're willing to make the sacrifice. I know it's a long time stretch for the children. It does make it a lot nicer for us when it's in the afternoon versus after 8 o'clock in the evening, traveling 5 hours. So, thank you for making that sacrifice on your end. Let's turn to Luke 19, and this is the conversion of Zacchaeus. Maybe we'll just read this, maybe you can read at least a little bit of a, we often call this a children's Bible, kind of a Bible story, but it's just as much a Bible story for us as adults as well. Luke 19, 1 through 10. Jesus entered and passed through Jericho, and behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus, which was chief among the publicans, and he was rich. And he sought to see Jesus, who he was, and he could not for the press, because he was little of stature. And he ran before and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up, and he saw him, and he said to him, Zacchaeus, make haste and come down, for today I must abide at that house. And he made haste and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all murmured, saying that he was gone to be a guest with a man that is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I will restore him fourfold. And Jesus said unto him, This day is salvation come to this house, for as much as he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which was lost. Then we have this very well-known story about a wee little man, like the song goes, who climbed up in a tree and he had this life-changing visit with Jesus. And when we read this story today, we kind of think of it as a heartwarming story of reconciliation. But if you were a Jew living at this time here in Israel, this encounter was seen as something quite different than the way we interpret it today. When Jesus said he would visit Zacchaeus, there wasn't a lot of approval or appreciation for that decision from Jesus. It says the people began to mutter. They began to murmur or mutter. In other words, they began to grumble among themselves and say, what is Jesus doing here? He is going to be the guest of a sinner. Not through Jesus. And if we find here, and what we find heartwarming, they found to be very offensive. This story of Zacchaeus here and the way that Jesus responded to him was not seen as a good thing. And when you look at the reasons why, it's because Jesus went in and had a meal with Zacchaeus. And meals eating together are something that I think it's, you say, probably sociologists would call that a boundary marker. And meals bring people together, but they can also keep people apart. And years ago in the United States, white people would not eat meals with black people. Restaurants were segregated, and even churches were segregated. Martin Luther King Jr. said that the most segregated hour in the nation was Sunday at 11 a.m. because there was so much segregation between black and white churches. And again, the thing of eating together was called a boundary marker, and who you left, who you eat with and who you don't eat with is a way of judging classes of people and whether we accept or don't accept people. So while proper Jews here saw meals as boundary markers that approved of certain people while keeping out other undesirable people. So who you had over for lunch or for a meal said a lot about how you felt about that person. Who you didn't have also said a lot about it as well. And Jesus came along here and broke those norms. And what did they say about Jesus? In Luke 7:34 it says, they said, the Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, behold a gluttonous man and a wine bibber and a friend of publicans and sinners. And that's what Jesus said. That's how he was judged. He said, he's come eating and drinking. And that was true. Jesus did come eating and drinking. He went to a lot of meals and a lot of, I don't know if we call them parties necessarily, but there's, I think, 50 or 60 instances of Jesus going to different houses and different places and meeting and eating with people that were often not very acceptable people by the the Jewish culture. They weren't considered to be people that we should be eating with. And so for Jesus, meals were not boundary markers, but they were a sign of God welcome into his kingdom. And if he was directly challenging this, that who he ate with was not a way to keep people out, but to invite people in. And that's how Jesus viewed eating with people, having meals with people. And after that, he was offered to pay back his, he said he's going to give half his money to the poor, and he's going to pay back all his dishonest earnings by four times. Jesus summarized it a little bit here by saying, for the Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. And I think that was kind of the summary of his meeting here with Zacchaeus. And that was Jesus' mission. And it should also be our mission as we think about being disciples. And one way that he did this, that he reached and sought out the lost, was by eating and drinking. Who he went to meals with and who he ate with was a way of witnessing. And so this morning for the message here, I'd like to consider the subject of hospitality. And I don't know how many of you have read the book The Gospel Comes with a House Key by Rosaria Butterfield. A few of you have seen some, yeah. So I had preached this message quite a while ago, a couple of times back, and that book was new, but it had some illustrations from it. Maybe I had a few quotes from it, but it had become a pretty popular book. So I'm not going to belabor that book exactly, but that was probably the inspiration for this message, was her challenge of how we as Christians can use hospitality as a form of witnessing, and how we can use our homes and open them up as places of hospitality, Christian hospitality. We were down in Grenada a number of years ago visiting, and again, it made me think that we don't necessarily think of hospitality as a ministry or a missionary effort, but anybody who serves on the mission field in other countries, and probably in your setting here as well, a little bit more than the average Lancaster County place, will tell you that hospitality is about as much of a job description as it just outward evangelism. And there was constantly people coming there, asking for things, asking for water, and their houses were open. And it was a challenge, I think, to the couple that we were with there sometimes, to be able to meet all those needs of all the people coming and asking for this, but they did a really good job of working with that. And our homes can be one of our greatest mission fields if we're willing to open them up and allow ourselves to practice Christian hospitality. But it is a struggle, and I think we have to admit that. And sometimes it's our standards that really cause us to be a struggle. I have heard of an incident where there was a family that left a Mennonite church because they felt that they just couldn't live up to the standards of the people around them or the other people in their church, and they kind of, I think it was kind of out of frustration that they just left, and so they just can't live up to the standard, the expectation that they felt there. I've heard of instances where somebody didn't invite somebody over, an older neighbor lady over, because their house wasn't cleaned up quite good enough, and their meal wasn't quite good enough, and so she mentioned that she doesn't think that she's going to have her over because her place isn't quite good enough. And I'm sure it would have been plenty good, but sometimes we just hold ourselves to such a high bar that we forget to practice hospitality, or we just stop practicing it. And so it's kind of it can be a neglected ministry. But it is a ministry that attends to the wants and needs of other people. And as we practice hospitality, there's a lot of different areas that we share. We share our family, we share our home, our finances, we share our food, our privacy, and our time. And all those things are sacrificed as we practice hospitality. And I don't know if we should even say sacrifice there. We should be giving them freely, because we also get a lot of benefit from practicing hospitality in our lives. And you think about how many fruits of the Spirit come together in practicing hospitality. And unless we open the doors of our homes to one another and toward those in need, the reality of the local church as a close-knit fellowship or a family is kind of just a theory if we don't practice hospitality and open up our homes and here is a place where people can come and go and where it's welcoming and inviting. So hospitality is another form of witnessing, and I think as conservative and Baptist, it's a way that we can actually authentically witness to people who sometimes shy away from evangelism because we maybe were a little too humble or whatever, and that's not good. We should be willing to evangelize as well. But we are good at hospitality. We're good at making food, and most of our houses are set up well for hospitality. And so it's something that we can, I think, specifically as conservative members, can practice in a very good way. That we're kind of have been brought up with a lot of the skills that are necessary to do it. And so it's something that we can do as Christians and as disciples specifically, as many of us maybe too. In the Bible, there's about 60 different verses about hospitality, and in Leviticus, it starts in the Old Testament, this idea of the stranger, welcoming the stranger and the other. Leviticus 19:33 and 34, I'll just read those verses. It says, "If a stranger sojourn with you in your land, you shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born unto you, and thou shalt love him as thyself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." And there's so many verses in the Old Testament that have that same theme of being, they were challenged, the children of Israel were challenged to welcome the stranger that was in their midst. And so you shall not vex him, but that he should be as one that dwelleth among you and is born among you. That was a pretty high standard there that was placed on hospitality in the Old Testament and on receiving the stranger. And it was supposed to be stressed because Israel knew what it was like to be misplaced in another country and treated as slaves. And God was saying, you know what that experience was like. And as a people, you should never be forcing that same experience on other people, but because of your love, you should be welcoming people in, but even the people that are different than the strangers. And often when Israel was judged, one of the things that was mentioned was that their oppression of the stranger or the alien in their land. And that was often listed in different places as one of the reasons why they were judged, because they did not take care of the stranger and the alien in the land. And then this theme just continues on here, hospitality continues on in the New Testament. Hebrews 13 starts with "Let brotherly love continue," and then he immediately links it to an exhortation on not neglecting hospitality, and that's found in Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. Maybe we'll just turn there and read those verses, because I think it really makes that link pretty clear there, that there's a direct link to how we practice brotherly love and what it means to be hospitable. Find those verses here. So Hebrews 13, 1 and 2. Let brotherly love continue, and be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Remember those who are in bonds as bound with them, and those that suffer adversity as being yourselves in the body. And so that, again, that idea of brotherly love is linked directly to hospitality and to being not forgetful of anything with strangers. And it's for those inside the church. Peter says that we should have fervent charity among yourselves. And the next thing he says there in those verses is use hospitality one to another without grudging. And so it's for inside the church to one another, and it's also for those outside the church that we draw them in. Luke 14:12-14, the parable of the great banquet, he said, "Then said he to those that bade him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, nor thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and recompense be made thee. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee, for thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just." And just very clear teaching there that when we have a meal, it's not just about inviting all the people that somehow put our status up, the wealthy people, the people that are the most comfortable, our family, but then we should also be inviting those in who are, like it says here, the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind. Christian hospitality is given here in the Bible is the sacred process of receiving outsiders and changing them from strangers to friends or family, and inviting them into the family of God. And so it's not just a project to change the other person, but it will also enrich us as we practice it too. And I think that's important as we practice hospitality, is that it's authentically out of true love for the person, not that we're seeing them as a project that needs to be fixed. Because if that's the feeling that we get, that's going to turn people off pretty quickly, that, you know, that we're trying to fix somebody. That's not going to work. It needs to be done from the heart of love and compassion for the person. There's some other examples here in the New Testament. Let's turn to John 3, back very close to Revelation there, into the John 3, verses 1 through 8. I'm going to leave this out of the NIV. And this is talking about Gaius, who it says in the King James, the elder unto the well-beloved Gaius, and talking about how he practiced hospitality here. It says in 3 John 1 through 8, to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth, dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. It gave me great joy when some believers came and testified about your faithfulness to the truth, telling how you continue to walk in it. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Dear friend, you are faithful in what you are doing for the brothers and sisters, even though they are strangers to you. They have told the church about your love. Please send them on their way in a manner that honors God. It was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such people so that they may work together for the truth. And this is just a personal example here of how John is pointing out that this man, Gaius, showed hospitality to strangers. And these strangers were most likely Christian preachers who were traveling from John's home church and who received hospitality when they came to the home of Gaius here. And they came back and they gave a very good report of him when they returned. And John calls his hospitality your love, or your way of, you showed your love to these people. And hospitality is one of the main practical outworkings of how we show charity or love to people inside the church and towards those outside the church as well. And so after praising Gaius here for his hospitality, he says, please send them on their way in a way that honors God. And that means not just giving them a friendly goodbye, but hospitality is about preparing people for the journey ahead of them as well, for the next steps in their journey. It prepares people for the road ahead, and it might mean providing food, sending along a packed lunch, washing their clothes, supplying financial help for future travel, giving directions, checking the oil in their car. These are just practical ways that we can not only receive people in, but also send them out as well with preparation and showing hospitality and love for what's coming ahead of them as well. There's also this spiritual aspect of hospitality and good fellowship that really energizes a person as well. When you have good fellowship, good hospitality, it provides a lot of spiritual enrichment to us as well and gives us energy, kind of invigorates a person and sends them on their way richer than they were before and with food for thought. That not only maybe is the food prepared, but good conversation, good fellowship also challenges and enriches us for the road ahead as well. In Luke 10:25-29, let's turn to that verse yet and read that section here where there's a certain lawyer, says it stood up here and tempted Jesus. Luke 10:25-29.
Thou hast answered right, this do, and thou shalt live. But
he learned to justify himself, said unto Jesus, and who is my neighbor? And then he goes on to tell the story of the Good Samaritan. There's a group of two authors that wrote a book called, I think it was called The Art of Neighboring or something like that. And they came up with this idea of neighboring as a way of reaching out to your neighbors, as a way of practicing hospitality and witnessing. And they made this tool where they made a grid of nine different boxes, or eight boxes, with the home in the middle, and then they had your eight closest neighbors spread around this box, kind of like a tic-tac-toe grid, if you can imagine that, with the home in the middle and then these boxes all around. And each of the nine boxes represented a neighbor that was closest to you, that your nine closest neighbors geographically. And they challenged people in the churches to see how many of them could list the names of all of the people in the eight or nine closest houses to them in their neighborhood. And then they also put it up a notch and said, can you also relate to something personal in their life? And I think they also, the first they said, have you ever talked to them? And then they also said, do you actually know them well enough to say something personal about what's going on in their life? And as they asked that, the percentage kept dropping and dropping and dropping. And they said there was only about 10% of the people that could fill in the names for all the eight boxes of the neighbors around them. And so just knowing the neighbors that live right around you is a challenge that we, each one of us, can have in relating to hospitality, no matter where we're at. We all have neighbors. Sometimes we live in the country and the neighbors are spread out a little bit more, but for those of us who live in towns or cities, the neighbors are much closer, much easier to get to. But do I even know the names of the neighbors around me as I think about who is my neighbor? There's a lot of hindrances to hospitality, and we have such busy schedules with families and friends. We just want to ask ourselves, how can we have time to add another person to that mix? And maybe this is probably more of a Lancaster County problem too, where there's so much family that takes up so much time. There's sometimes it feels like we just don't have much time to practice hospitality to people outside our relations and our church. And busyness is one of the main hindrances to hospitality, I believe. It's just our busy lifestyle where we just don't have time to fit it in because we're too busy with doing other things. There's a couple that talked about, I think they called it, they came up with this term of scruffy hospitality, and they said about their experience of offering hospitality, they said, after 7 years of marriage, my wife and I had welcomed numerous friends into our home. Once we decide to host friends for an evening, we usually kick into get-ready mode, a fast and furious sprint in the days and hours before our friends arrive. We divide and conquer the to-do list, select the menu, complete grocery shopping, mow the lawn, sweep the floor, run the vacuum, clean the playroom, set the table, clean the playroom again, and somehow pray that it all happens before the doorbell rings. And I thought that's a pretty good description of getting ready for company. We want the house to look good, we want the food to be all right, and so we create ourselves a lot of busyness and stress getting ready for it, but it's kind of what's expected often. And they said over the years the to-do list has prepared us for hosting company, but it has also prevented us from welcoming friends into our homes. And they said that they talk about Southern rules of hospitality. We have our own Mennonite rules of hospitality. They said that offering it with excellence has affected how often we invite people into our home. And so they said the question comes up, we should have whoever over sometime, and then you delay and postpone the invitation because the to-do list is just too long. My house isn't quite ready, it's not quite clean enough, I don't have enough food, and it's very easy to just kind of push it out and say, well, another evening would be better, another time or whatever, and in that way not practice hospitality. But entertaining guests is not the same as Christian hospitality. There's a difference between entertaining guests and practicing hospitality. Entertaining is about yourself. It's about your food and your house and your level of entertainment and projecting that to the people that you have over. It's about having a good experience for your guests that they will remember and then hopefully have you over as well and do the same thing back. But Christian hospitality is about serving, and that's the difference between entertaining guests and practicing hospitality. It means being able to swallow your pride and have people over, even if the glass isn't made or all the toys aren't picked up and you don't have an excellent snack prepared with three or four different items or whatever. Maybe it's just one thing. But being willing to put our own pride down and practice it anyway. And entertaining will always be done only to people who are in your peer group or who you're trying to reach above your peer group. That's entertaining people. And we often do it with the intent of bettering our social standing. Again, I don't know if it's a quote from that book, but hospitality is not house inspecting, it's friendship. And the people that we really care about, that are really our friends, are not coming over because they want to judge their house for how clean it is and what the standard is for our food and all that kind of thing. It's about friendship. And the people that are really our friends are going to recognize that as well. Hospitality also means inviting people outside of your comfort zone. And that may mean that we'll need to take a risk with our security. Again, we don't put ourselves in, especially if we have children, in very dangerous situations or let people that are, in a sex offender or something like that in their house. There's limits to that. But often we set the bar pretty high that we don't want to let anybody that could be any kind of risk into our home. And I think that we need to especially keep this in mind that allowing people in will affect our comfort zone. With the current political climate right now, it seems like I'm not sure I should say we got our men into the White House, but it seems like a lot of Mennonites, we might not vote, but there's certainly one person that we wanted to get in over the other person. And many of the things that Trump says, I'll just say his name too, pertaining to immigrants and refugees and the poor are directly opposed to what Jesus teaches. And I think we need, as Christians and Anabaptists, we need to be willing to stand up against that, especially not that we need to take political action, but when we're talking to people about these things, that we, as Christians, stand up for the people that are the immigrants and the refugees and things like that. But sometimes I think the political climate that we're in now kind of pushes back against that, and I think that we need to resist that. And first of all, what did Jesus teach? That's what determines how we talk about the strangers and the pilgrims in our land. So we need to have the courage to disagree with that mentality of keeping the other people out and kind of this whole thing that, smearing the whole group of immigrants as all bad people, because it's simply not true. There's many, many good people that are immigrants and refugees, and we as Christians should be the ones that are showing love and hospitality to those people. Hebrews 13:1-2 says, "Let brotherly love continue, be not forgetful of entertaining strangers, for thereby some have entertained strangers unawares." We heard that verse before, but inviting not just family and friends over, but those who are outside of that group. And again, taking a little bit of risk in who we have over, inviting in strangers, and it says that some have entertained angels unawares. And when we entertain people at our house, when we practice hospitality, again, not maybe I shouldn't say entertaining, because I use that as a negative way to talk about it, but when we practice that, we will often receive unexpected blessings and find out perspectives that we didn't have before when we open ourselves up to having people who are not like us into our homes. I think the hospitality is most powerful when it's practiced towards those who are kind of the other or the stranger in our land, whether it is immigrants or refugees or those of different ethnicities, races, religions. Those people are often accustomed to receiving hate rather than love from people. And when we as Christians show open up our homes and show love, it has a great effect on people that are not used to being treated that way. To step out in faith and again take a risk. That is part of what practicing faith is. My parents live in Wisconsin, and they had a situation years ago where there was a a manager came into their store, and they didn't know who he was, but he had come from Pennsylvania in the court system. He had been charged with a crime, and the court case was held in the town where my parents lived in Sparta. And we had the case, and they found out that he was not guilty, and so they said, well, you're free to go. And so he was left there in the town with no means and nothing. He had no money, he had no vehicle or anything. And they said, you're free to go, but he just didn't know what to do from there. And so he came to my parents' store and asked, he knew Mennonites because he grew up in the Philadelphia area, but lived in Lancaster County. And so he had some connection with Mennonites, and that's who he went to because that's who he was familiar with. And they actually invited him into their house and left him stay there for, I think, 2 weeks while he kind of got back on his feet. He had been pretty traumatized by the whole being in prison for a month and shipped back and forth and then finally exonerated. But they weren't quite sure about this either because this man had just been in the prison system. They knew that he was exonerated. They knew the judge, and that's what happened. So they knew that he wasn't guilty of the crime that he was charged with. But there was some trepidation there with writing him in, but they decided to do it. And he stayed there for 2 weeks, and they then gave him means, and he was able to move back to this area. It's kind of an interesting link because he's homeless, he lives in his car, and that whole experience kind of sent him in a downward spiral. But he actually parks his car where I work. Matt Landis said he can park his car behind their building. And so for a couple of years now, every evening he comes there and parks his car because if you're homeless and living in a car, people think, well, you just go wherever you want to, but it's not easy to live in a car without getting hassled by police. And then again, they have their reasons for doing that, I understand. So he comes at 7 o'clock and leaves by 7 a.m. every day, and sometimes Saturday morning I go in and let him take a shower, but I think that was 12 years ago we met him out there in Wisconsin and have continued that relationship on. He claims to be a Christian, but then there's questions. I try to help where I can, but there's challenges in dealing with him. But I'd say we have what I would call a friendship, and I think it's been a very good experience for me in understanding what it means to be homeless, living in a vehicle, and all the challenges that go with that. So how we view our homes is going to greatly affect whether we practice hospitality or not. Do I view my home as a fortress or a gift to be shared? And I think that's, in today's world, with all the, we always hear about all the crime and the bad things happening, people view their homes often more as a fortress to keep everybody out. It's my safe place, and it's a place where I defend it, and I don't let other people in because they're a risk to my security. And it just goes to more and more withdrawn society and people that are afraid of each other and view their homes as a kind of like a castle walled against the outside. Front porches are now mostly decoration, and a lot of new houses aren't even the front porch anymore, where people used to sit on their front porch and watch the world go by, but that almost is a thing of the past. I'm sure there's still houses that are built that way, but a lot of houses now, even the construction of them, the front door is kind of set into the house, and there's no front porch or anything where people can just sit out and be friendly to the neighbors. Again, just a sign of, I think, where our society is at. So do I see my home as a fortress or as a gift to be shared, a place where people can be welcomed in? And I think this is a quote from Rosaria Butterfield from that book, Hospitality of the House Key. She said, one kind of household is absolutely incompatible with the practice of hospitality, other than being completely incapable. This household, the household that loves things too much and loves people too little, cannot honor God through the practice of radically ordinary hospitality. The household that has too much and thinks too highly of material possessions has become seduced by the idols of acquisition and achievement. If you love acquisition of things and achievement, you will never practice hospitality. That's a pretty harsh judgment there, but I think there's certainly a strong element of truth in that, is that the way that we think about our things is going to really affect how we practice hospitality and how we view our homes as a place where we need to keep people out or whether we can welcome them in. So what are some ways that we can be hospitable? Just a random thing we can make along the rest of this, and maybe you have some other ideas. In the next year, try to invite some of your neighbors over in their adjoining houses for a meal. And again, that takes getting out of our comfort zone, but they're willing to do that. Hosting foreign students is another thing that welcomes people into our homes and is a good way to share the gospel and broaden our perspective with other people and other cultures. Having foster children is another way that a lot of Christians and Mennonites welcome children into their home and open up their homes in that way. There's the example of a Shunammite woman who had a room ready for when the prophet came through. She had a room that was set aside as a guest room that was always available. And I learned to have a place like that. And I think the hospitality is especially important at holidays. That's when people who don't have a lot of family, who don't have connections, that's oftentimes where they feel the most alone. And that's when we have the most family gatherings and the most things going on often. And we're willing to share our family with people that don't have a family. We, as Mennonites, we have a strong family culture, and so can we open up our homes and our family gatherings to people who are outside of that? That can be a challenge and can be rich for us as we do that. Sure, our church buildings would be places of hospitality. And I know you have the Reach Out Ministry here, which is a very good way of practicing hospitality, but our church buildings sit empty most of the time. And I've often wondered, how could they be set up for people to be, homeless people to be able to park their cars or somehow opened up to provide places of hospitality and be utilized more than just, 10% of the week. Again, those are just questions and ideas about how we practice hospitality. There are some reasons the Bible says to refuse hospitality. Those who teach false doctrine and those who claim to be Christians but are living in sin. And it says, those people, you do not welcome into your home. And so there is, and again, there's people that we would not necessarily welcome in their homes into that setting, but sometimes, depending on what their maybe past crimes or something like that are, we may visit them somewhere else as well. It doesn't always mean it has to be practiced in homes. But the overriding teaching we see in the New Testament is Christians should practice hospitality. And we live in a culture where more and more people are becoming more and more lonely. There's a statistic that says that most Americans eat about 40% of their meals alone. And we're fast and faster becoming this kind of fragmented, divided society. And a lot of it is because we don't do things together. We don't have people over. We don't share with our neighbors. And as Christians, I think we have the answer to that problem of this lonely, isolated society. But we begin to understand others when we share a meal with them. You begin to understand other people and other cultures, and you're able to share the gospel in a meaningful way. Because sharing, as we talk about boundary markers, and sharing a meal with others shows that you value them and see them as equals. It is, like we talk about boundary markers, who you invite over says something about whether you value them as people and see them as equals. Another quote, I believe, from the book there, too, is, daily, ordinary hospitality practice for God's glory, sanctify your boundaries and fortify your faith. It also exposes the idolatry in our hearts that falsely declare our homes, our castles, and our time our own. Hospitality combats the crushing loneliness that too many brothers and sisters in Christ bear by offering basic care, a meal, a hug, or a prayer. With redeemed hearts and the promises of God, we have much to share with others. Hospitality is a lived theology that your unbelieving neighbors can taste and feel. And I think that's a very good line there at the end. It says, read that over. Hospitality is a lived theology that your unbelieving neighbors can taste and feel. So one level of hospitality is just about putting another plate on the table and making your home a place of welcome. And on a deeper level, it's about open and welcoming to all people, and showing Christ-like love through doing that. And so my challenge this morning is that we don't neglect the ministry of hospitality, that we practice it, and we resist all the hindrances that can come up as we think about how we practice and open up our homes to hospitality. And I'd also say that I appreciate the hospitality that we've been showing, having a meal with Aaron's and being over at Kevin's, and just when you visit other churches, you get to experience some of that same hospitality, so I appreciate that, and I appreciate the sharing these messages with you. And that, I think, is where I'll conclude for this morning. And then I'll maybe have a word of prayer and open it. I'll turn it over to you then. Now, so let's bow our heads for a word of prayer. Dear God, we thank you again for your many blessings to us. We thank you for your example and your teachings on Christian love and hospitality. And we just pray that you would help us as we think about practicing hospitality as a way of witnessing, as a way of showing good love to other people, that we would be able to have the faith to open up our homes to people even that are outside of our comfort zone, and that we would be able to just let your spirit guide us in that, and we would be able to heed your spirit in times when we feel like we should have people over and that we're willing to do that even when our place isn't the most perfect and the situation isn't perfect as well. And so, again, we thank you for the church here, and pray that you would bless each one that is attendance here, and thank you again for your many blessings to us. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.